We landed our slaves at Roatan, herding them down into the big lighters where the Dago overseers packed them in like sheep, while Spring conducted business with half a dozen brokers. A wizened little Frenchman in a long taffeta coat, three greasy Dagos in dirty finery, a big Dutchman with a face like a suet pudding, and a swarthy little Yankee. They bickered and bid with Spring and divided the 600 among them at an average price of $9 a pound, which came to somewhere between $700,000 and $800,000 for the cargo. No money changed hands. Nothing was signed. Spring simply jotted details down in a notebook, and I dare say the only transactions that took place would be the transfer of bills and orders in perfectly respectable banks in Charlestown, New York, Rio, and London. The niggers we landed would be resold, some to plantation owners along the main, but most into the United States, when smugglers could be found to beat the American blockade. When you calculate that the trade cargo we'd given to King Gizo had been worth maybe a couple of thousand pounds, well, no wonder the slave trade throve. I said we sold all our slaves, but in fact, we kept Lady Caroline Lamb. Spring had decided that if I persevered with her instruction in English, she would be worth keeping as an interpreter for later voyages. Such slaves were immensely valuable, and we had actually made our last trip without one. To her, Spring also added about a dozen musty and quadroon girls sent aboard by brokers who wanted them shipped to America where they were destined for the New Orleans brothels. Spring agreed for a consideration to take them as far as Havana, where we were to load cargo for our homeward trip. We didn't linger in Roatan. Slaves came aboard with a load of lime and scoured out the slave deck, and then we warped out of the bay to cleaner water, and the pumps and hoses washed out the shelves for 24 hours before Spring was satisfied. After that, we made sail, due north for the Yucatan Passage, and for the first time, I think, since I'd first set foot on that damn ship, I began to feel easy in my mind. I should have known better, of course. A dandy little sloop flying the American colors came up out of the southwest when we were 3 days out of Roatan and had Cuba clear on our starboard bow. That was nothing in itself. Spring put on more sail and we held our own, scudding northeast. Then, out from behind Cape San Antonio, comes a brig with the stars and stripes fluttering at her peak. And there we were, caught between them, unable to fly and, in my case anyway, most unwilling to fight. But not John Charity Spring. He turned the Balliol College on her heel and tried to race the sloop westward, but on this tack she came up hand over fist, and presently from her bow gun comes a plume of smoke, and a shot kicked up the blue water off our port bow.
"Clear for action!" bawled Spring.
And with Sullivan roaring about the deck, they ran out the guns while the little sloop came tearing up, and in a matter of minutes we were in the thick of a damned hot running fight. I saw the sloop running across our bows, her broadside popping away like fury, and the scream and crash of shot just overhead sent me diving for the scuppers. I fetched up against the rail with a crash, and then there was a rending crackle from overhead. Something hit the deck with an almighty crash, and somebody fell on top of me. I pushed him off, and my hand came away sticky with blood. Horrified, I watched as the body rolled into the scuppers. It had no head, and blood was pouring out of the neck stump like a fountain. I climbed unsteadily to my feet and looked around. A great tangle of cordage and splintered timber lay between the main and mizzen masts. Looking up, I saw that our main topmast had come away, and for a moment I felt the ship floundering and rolling helplessly. Someone was shrieking beneath the wreckage, and Sullivan was jumping forward with an axe and a dozen men at his heel trying to clear the tangle away. Beyond them, Spring was at the wheel, but his orders were lost in the crash of our port guns. We were hit again, and for a time you could hardly see across the deck for acrid powder smoke. I crouched beside the rail, palpitating until the clearing party came dragging their mass of wreckage, and I had to jump away as they bundled it overside. Our guns had stopped firing, and presently I was aware the Yankee wasn't firing either, so I chanced to look. Somehow, a semblance of order had been restored. The gun crews were standing by their pieces, Sullivan was by the mizzen, volleying commands to the topmen, and Spring was at the wheel. The Yankee sloop was astern, limping, with her foresail all askew, but the brig was ploughing along like thunder, and in our injured condition she would be with us in no time at all. Then, with slaves aboard us, that would be the gallows.